With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again. Okay.
Sam Sorbo.
And welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show. Thank you so much for joining me. I've got quite the show for us today to go through. And we're going to get sort of serious. We're going to have some fun. We're going to talk about runaway government. Trump is moving the convention. Did you hear? We'll talk about that for just a moment. A Harvard professor has now been indicted. Tim Scott's on a rampage. It's crazy out there, folks. It's crazy out there. And I'll be honest. I'll be just upfront and honest with you folks. I am frustrated. I am aggravated. I'm struggling to kind of just figure my way through this, because look, the evidence is coming in and has been coming in, trickling in, I should say. The two narratives. COVID is not as dangerous as they said it was going to be. It's not even as dangerous as it needed to be to warrant a response such as the one we've had. The numbers are not adding up. Now, we can talk about how dangerous it was. And yes, it cost people their lives. And so do other things. But I saw a video recently about risk. And the idea that some risk is assumed and taken for granted and accepted for granted, I should say, whereas some risks simply aren't. So the risk that you are involved in a car accident is substantially more than the risk that your airplane crashes. And yet there are people who, they get in a car every day, but they refuse to get on an airplane because of the specter, because they don't want, the statistics don't appeal to them. The statistics don't, they find the statistics less meaningful than their perception. And so the idea that perception is a big part of risk assessment. So we don't adequately assess risk because we are too beholden to our perceptions and our emotions, which I found that fascinating, and I've been thinking about it. Now, our reaction to COVID was, hey, shut down, just shut down everything, specifically the economy and society, shut down. Because the risk of COVID just seemed to loom so large, it dominated the space and nobody considered the risk of the shutdowns. I call them plural shutdowns because it was the economy, yes. It was society, yes. So it was two major shutdowns. I'm trying to, there must have been more, right? Shut down the gyms. So shut down your health. Shut it down. Shut down the parks. So shut down your health. Shut down your immune system. Right? Shut down your brain. Because don't question. Just do it. Don't question. Follow the rules. Do what your teachers say. And of course, we've all been groomed to that end. We've all been groomed to do exactly what the teachers tell us to do. There were, I'm sure, in your classroom, like there were in mine, there were people who like refused, like they didn't actually outright refuse, but they were the rebellious sorts, right? We had those. I was not one of them. I was always a good little girl doing exactly what I was told. Still do to this day, right? It's ingrained. When you have a child, give me a child. Give me a child. What's the phrase? There's a phrase that people know. Give me a child to educate a child, and I'll have him for the rest of his life. Something like that, right? And so here we are. And now we don't even know how to get out of it. We don't know how to get out of it because we've never asked the proper questions. We've never done a proper risk assessment. And there is no risk-free option. But we were told, as long as we followed the rules, our risks were mitigated. We were protected. We were taken care of. Don't worry. Be happy. Evidence to the contrary. Because they've been wrong about so much. And yet we're still following. We're still doing what we're told. And now we have, and partly I blame the media. The media, the fourth estate, the people who are supposed to hold accountable. Twitter's holding, you know, @Jack is holding Trump accountable, or at least, you know, pretending to. Oh, we've got to fact check him real time. We can't, you know. The network's trying to hold, you know, Trump accountable. The network's refusing to show the Trump show, by the way. Well, how clever was that? Every day, everybody went home. Well, they were home, right? They sat down to dinner and watched the Trump show. By the way, where is the task force? Where is the COVID tax? Why are we still shut down anywhere? Where's the COVID task force? What happened to Fauci? Where'd he go? Where's Dr. Birx? What happened? And we were told, stay home, stay safe. And if you go out, shame on you. You're not keeping people safe. Oh, sorry, you're going to protest? Wait, what are you protesting? Because if you're protesting the shutdown, that's dangerous and reckless. Oh, but if you're protesting for Black Lives Matters, oh, that's cool. Go right ahead. Don't let me stand in your way. I'm so frustrated with all of this. So Jason Buttrill tweeted, when you click to donate to Black Lives Matters, or Black Lives Matter, I suppose, it takes you to Act Blue. If donated money goes unclaimed, Act Blue disperses the money however they want. And so they put in their top 10 expenditures on a list. I have to read this to you because, wow. I feel like, no, I can't, really struggling with what to share today. I'll be honest. So bear with me. Okay. Here's their top 10 list. Number one, Bernie 2020. Guess how much money? Are you sitting down? $186,780,034. $186 million. Bernie 2020. Biden for president comes in at number two, $119 million. Elizabeth Warren, presidential exploratory committee, $93 million. Pete for America, $78 million. Amy for America, $43 million. Friends of Andrew Yang, $31 million. Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, $31 million. Democratic National Committee, $29 million. Amy McGrath for Senate, $29 million. Okay. This is problematic because if you donate to Black Lives Matter, are they a 501c3? And then they're just funneling the money into presidential campaigns and political campaigns? Isn't there something? Now, okay, I know I'm not the, you know, sharpest knife in the drawer, but there are limits to how much you can contribute as an individual to a campaign. There are corporate limits also, as far as I know. But there are no limits to how much you contribute to Black Lives Matter. Isn't there something wrong with this? So, Okay, you know what I'm doing? I'm going to be up on Twitter. I'll just be watching my mentions if you want to tweet me because we are live. Maybe I will notice it. Can we get a discussion on our business, both small and large, in this reopen have such huge disparity in how they are operating, or in the cases I see every day, slowly dying because they are not opening fast enough. Some places open and thriving, others dying. That's true. This has been so... The management of this... And here's the thing. Can't lay it at Trump's feet, folks. We can't. I would if I could. I would. Not that I'm looking for reasons to indict him. I'm certainly not. I think that he's the best thing that's happened to this country in decades, frankly. But look, look, the buck stops, right? But it's not his doing. It's the governor's. And so what I see disparity. I see inequality. I see inequality. I see the government saying, okay, Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS, you big boys, you get to stay open, but the little guys, no. And I find it infuriating. It's just not right. By the way, the big guys, too many people. The little guys, fewer people. Better social distancing. Why did we say, little guys, you can stay open, big guys, you have to close? Well, because they've got the lobbyists. So you want to talk about unfairness in the system, and this is the best system that humans have come up with? And by the way, rooted in Judeo-Christian ethics, okay? If you don't root it in Judeo-Christian ethic, then it's all going to pot anyway, which is kind of a strange pun that I just made. Not my intention to make a pun like that, but I did. How dare they? Why are we not protesting that? And so small business owners, I'd like to see you protesting. That's a protest. So I don't go to protests because I have issues with, I have health issues. But that's a protest I would even go to. I've been to a Second Amendment protest. I suppose I could go to a small business protest. Somebody ought to organize a small business protest. March. March for our businesses. We need to help small business learn how to promote themselves and network. That will save us, I believe. We need a small business network. Do you know it's funny because... I've been working with a group, homeschooling, right? So I've been working with a group to start kind of a homeschooling type of network, say. And they exist, but there isn't like one main big one. There isn't a gorilla. And we need that. We need a gorilla sort of, in a sense, advocating. An advocacy group, a lobbying group, something that is big enough that gets noticed. What, you know, they did the PPE loans or PPP or whatever. I'm sorry. Here, you take $1,200 and then you just sit and be quiet, dear. Here's your little piece of candy. Now be quiet while I talk to the adults and take care of some business. Mommy has some business transactions to do. Teacher has some business transactions. It is absolutely in. So I told you I'm struggling today. Struggling. Okay. Let's see. So I was going to go, I want to read to you a little bit of this article that just came out on City Journal and talk about this. So this is an interview between two people, one of whom, Glenn Lurie, is an African-American professor. And the point of the article is to sort of point out that blacks hold their fate in their own hands. So I have a friend who is a self-made man, Mason Weaver. He's come on the show several times. I adore this man. I actually just saw him the other day in person, which was just, and he's just brilliant. And he says, why are blacks always looking to whites to solve all their problems? That's not his voice. I don't know. He gets a little bit upset about that kind of thing. I don't want a white person coming in and trying to solve problems for me. I can solve my own problems. And he says, you know, where blacks put their energy, they dominate. The NFL is predominantly black. The NBA is predominantly black. And that's probably a racist thing to say. And they'll take me off the air. I don't know. I just saw a headline that Zoom is censoring the Chinese dissidents. So they're not allowed to have Zoom calls now because Zoom is on the side of communist China. Folks, it is coming down. It is coming down fast and hard. And I honestly, I wish I had more answers. We need small businesses to promote them. We need conservatives to figure out how to get their crap together to combat what is actually happening right now. So, okay, let me get through this because I'm going to run out of time. I got so much to say today. Holy smokes. Okay. Peter Winkler is a U.S. correspondent for the Swiss daily newspaper, Neue Zürcher Zeitung, whatever that, Neue Zürcher. Okay. Anyway, and he asks him about the protests that the protests are based on quote unquote systemic racism. And Glenn Lurie, who is an African American professor, so you know I'm not really qualified to comment on this stuff, but I'm going to read what he has to say. Right, he says the claim is that the police are hunting black people, that black people are at risk, that there's an epidemic of violence against black people, and specifically unarmed innocent black people. And he says that he thinks that the scale of that problem is exaggerated. While he doesn't doubt that there are evil people in the world, and there may be people, there are people, I think he's not even doubting, that there are people who target black people. He says there are approximately 330 million people in the United States, and there are many tens of thousands of encounters between citizens and the police every day. And he says we take a half dozen or a dozen. They're outrageous, admittedly. They're disturbing, yes, of police incidents of police violence. Yeah, okay. Form it into a general account of how people are treated. You can't take a single incident and say, wow, that's how bad the system is. Because the reverse doesn't work. So the reverse is, well, Obama got elected, therefore no racism. That's the reverse. So if you're saying, look, a white officer choked out a black man and killed him, and that is indicative of systemic racism, then I can say, well, Obama got elected, and that's indicative of absolutely no racism. Boom. I blew up your whole argument. We need to apply some logic to these things. And that does not distract at all from the fact that Chauvin doing what he did was an act of evil commensurate with any totalitarian act. Okay? But to then take that and apply it to the entire police force is unjustified and unfair. And so Winkler, who is interviewing Lurie, goes on and asks about the brutality. And Lurie says, I don't want to understate it. The case is terrible. It's difficult to look at the images. No, No kidding. Okay. There was nothing good about it. It's certainly not good policing, but you still don't know exactly what happened. These are his words. He says it requires an in-depth investigation. And so it's problematic that people have started to call it a lynching and to say that it characterizes the nature of racial relationships in America today. If that's your claim, then my claim is Obama and Michelle characterize the nature of racial relationships in the United States today. And they were both elected into public office, the highest office in the land. And therefore, there's no racism whatsoever because of that. It's exhausting. It's exhausting fighting illogic with illogic. it's exhausting. Okay, so I'll stop. He says it's a kind of collective hysteria. Well, that's true. It's not. We can't dismiss it. It happened. Absolutely. We shouldn't dismiss it. But he's denying that these incidents are representative of the everyday experience of African Americans. And so Mason Weaver points out, he goes, if you get on a bus and the bus driver's black, do you get off the bus? No. If you go to a bank and the guy who's processing your loan is a black man, do you say, no, I don't want the loan anymore? Do you deny service to somebody at a table where you're waiting tables? You say, black people sat at my table, I'm not going to serve them. No. Although if they're deplorables, you might. That guy's wearing a Trump hat, I'm not going to serve him. It's its own kind of racism. Red hat racism. Red hat racism. I need to tweet that. Okay. Let's see. I like that. Red hat racism. Okay. He says he's convinced that it's more about... there's more about it than what happened to George Floyd. He says the George Floyd incident was a catalyst, but he's hoping we can maybe talk about the broader framework and the circumstances in which racial charges are made in the United States. I'm losing hope that that's a possibility because people are not behaving rationally. So you can't hope to have a rational conversation with an irrational person. And these people are irrational. They're irrational. And they've been the irrational people have been elected to and now currently hold public office. And we'll get to that. But he says, Winkler counters, even a superficial look at the statistics confirms that there are more confrontations, including violent ones, between blacks and the police. Isn't that evidence of a racial prejudice? And Lurie says, not necessarily, because more whites than blacks are shot by the police in the U.S. But it's true that the number of blacks killed by police relative to population is higher. Okay. However, the problem of police violence affects all ethnic groups. And then he says, if you have behavior that attracts police attention, you're going to deal with the police on a more frequent basis. Criminal behavior is not equally distributed across all population groups. African Americans are overrepresented in prison because they commit more acts that can be punished with prison. Blacks make up an average of around 40% of inmates in prisons and jails, but they make up no more than 15% of the population. Well, that's obviously unfair. No, if you look at the statistics, there's no evidence to support the hypothesis that this overrepresentation can be explained by racist prejudices of the police or the courts. Rather, the numbers show that this is due to an overrepresentation of blacks who violate the law. It's legitimate to ask why black men commit more crimes than whites, but it's a fact that they commit massively more homicides, almost 50% of homicides. Well, representing maybe 6% or 7% of the U.S. population. Or consider robbery. Many more whites are victimized by blacks than vice versa. Speaking in absolute numbers, not per capita. The main threat to the quality of life of people living in black areas is the criminal behavior of their fellow citizens, most of whom happen to be black. Black people in America and cities are victims of rape, robbery, and murder to a very significant degree. Why aren't we talking about the victims, by the way, in this whole conversation? Why don't we talk about the overrepresentation of black victims? black people, sorry, to a very, and the perpetrators are almost always black. The police are part of the solution to that problem. Black people need the police more than other people do. And I would say the article goes on, but that, to me, that was one of the most compelling things that he said. And that's why people who are saying, hey, defund the police, they are putting the black communities at risk more than others. He says he assumes that there's racism in Switzerland and Germany. He probably France is flawless too. Of course, he's being sarcastic. He says basically what he wants to say is that racism is a fact of human culture. It just is. And should we be fighting against it? Absolutely. Absolutely. We should eschew racism. Absolutely. Because it doesn't help us individually or corporately. He says, I'm 72 years old. I remember what things were like in the 50s and 60s. America has radically changed over the past 50 years. Still, and it's still changing. Whites can lose their jobs today if they talk to blacks in the wrong tone. Institutions at all levels of government work full-time against racism. Every university and major corporation has a powerful executive position that monitors and strives for diversity and inclusion. Affirmative action measures have even penetrated Silicon Valley. They're fighting phantoms. They're creating phantoms and then fighting against them. But he goes on, he says, racism is real. Sure, okay, it exists. But as a crucial factor that enables or prevents social advancement, it has lost a lot of its force in the past half century. He says many of the deep-seated inequality problems in America that affect everyone, frankly, have to do with the culture and behavior of black people themselves. He's talking about lack of educational achievement. Apparently, if you do well in school, there are pockets in our culture that are like, why are you doing well in school? You're just a, you know, don't be their B-I-T-C-A, you know, like. But that's counterproductive. He's talking about the higher crime rate. He's talking about the collapse of the black family. 7 out of 10 black children are born outside of marriage. That is a precursor to poverty. That is a leading indicator of impoverishment, chosen impoverishment. Households where a mother is present but no father are more likely to produce adolescent males with behavioral problems because fathers are necessary. But what have we done? We've infantilized the male. Our entire culture has infantilized the male. It's funny because I had this conversation, and you know, this whole week I on my videos, I've done videos about sex, talking with your kids about sex, teaching your kids about sex. I don't get too graphic. I just want to be supportive, or you know, and I talk about this on the videos as well. We've infantilized the male. I believe that the male libido is supposedly like peaks around 18, 20. Very, very strong desire for the young man. Sex. Very, very strong desire. Right up there with eating, sleeping, water, sex. Right up there. And I believe that men are called, and women have traditionally held them to this standard of basically no sex before marriage. And that was cultural for centuries, basically. That women held them to that standard as a way of making them become men. Prove yourself before you are worthy of the sex act. Of gratification. Prove yourself. Become a man first. And our entire culture is now, I mean, you cannot turn on a show today without a graphic sex scene. Our entire culture and the culture of Hollywood seems to be Almost entirely, 95%, 90 or 95%. I don't know. I mean, I don't watch anything anymore. I can't, because it's either violent and or has a great deal of sexual content. And it's not that I'm a prude. It's that I find it so boring. I'm sorry. Well, I can't watch the violence. I just can't. But the sex stuff is like, please. Okay. Come on. Show me something that is intellectually stimulating. And so instead of being intellectual, we've dumbed everything down to just sex, just have sex all the time. And when you say to a young man, hey, just follow your urges, what kind of man is that who just follows his urges whenever he gets the urge? He just follows his urges. By the way, why is weight wrong? Survival of the fittest, dude. That's why I believe you give a woman a gun. Give her at least a fighting chance. Because right now, this is what we're seeing on the streets. Survival of the fittest. So he goes on, Lori. People are frustrated that conventional political solutions, such as expanding anti-discrimination and welfare programs, have not worked. That's why they take refuge in the empty thesis of racism. They speak of 1619, when the first blacks landed in America, and they speak of slavery, which was abolished more than 150 years ago. They talk of centuries of oppression, but they don't talk about how the social condition of blacks in America may well have been healthier in 1950 than it is today. The integrity of the family structure, the level of the crime rate, the relationship. Do you know the families? I think in the 1950s, the black family was actually stronger than the white family. There was less divorce in the black community than in the white community, if I remember correctly. The level of the crime rate, the relationship to work of the poorly educated, and the values with which many children are raised. Summarized in one sentence, he says, racism exists, of course, but it does not sufficiently explain what is going on here. He says, to address that, you address education, but also it's about behavioral, emotional, psychological, and social development. That's morals. You learn restraint, patience, postponing reward. What did I just talk about? Sex. Postponing reward. That's a huge indicator of success. But no, we're telling our kids, just gratify yourselves at any given time with whatever you want, including sex. And what is sex if there's no commitment? What is sex? It's treating another human being like your puppet. That's what it is. Oh, baby, baby, I love you. I love you. Give me some sugar. It's treating another person like your slave. Oh, but it was consensual. Yeah. That's because women have been diseducated to demand integrity. Because a woman's libido doesn't peak until she's about 30. That's how she can hold men accountable. But no, now the culture says, you're just such a prude, give it up. Sleep with whoever you want, sleep with everybody. Try it out, explore. My husband tells a story of Gianni Versace. They went to dinner. They went to dinner several times. Johnny called him. Johnny liked him and invited him to a big party with a lot of Hollywood celebrities and stuff, and then to another party, it was a little smaller, and then another party, a little bit smaller than that. And finally, hey, come to dinner. And it turned out that it was just the two of them, and they sat at 90 degrees to each other. And halfway through dinner, Johnny's hand went on Kevin's knee and Kevin removed it. And he said, Johnny, you know me, I'm not gay. And Johnny said, but Kevin, in life, you have to, and he used a word, but you have to screw everything. The goat, the dog, everything. That's just debauchery. Kevin said, Johnny, all my life, I've been on this road. And he's using his hands to indicate like just a straight, narrow path, basically. And you're on, and he moves his hands over to the other side of the table, and he says, you're on this road. And Johnny, without missing a beat, he goes, I build a bridge. There were no bridges built. There were bridges broken, actually, that evening. Anyway, all right, let's move on. So you learn restraint, patience, postponing reward, things like that. When I look at statistics and find high rates of school failure, the low percentages of blacks in the professions, lawyer, doctor, engineer, or scientist. And the thing is, the opportunities are there, okay? If Ben Carson can do it without a hand up, with a mother who insisted that he write book reports that she didn't ever admit to him that she couldn't read, okay? There is a way that's tried and true, frankly. When I see the high rate of criminality and violence that is endemic in black communities, I see a failure in development in people reaching their full human potential. It's not just a question of mistakes or poor choices by these individuals and their families. Yes, it's about the schools. Partly related to discrimination, the legacy of that discrimination, sure. They're starting with significantly less. That's true. But their morals have been decimated. And the proof is out there that if you have the moral structure, hard work, perseverance, postponing gratification, you can get there. But if you don't have that moral framework, you're not even going to try. And that's what we see. He says, it's a common mistake to think that we are still in the middle of the 20th century and that the decisive obstacle to the successful inclusion of blacks in society is racial prejudice. Many people insist that we debate racism, face the injustices of history, and so on. Instead, they should be looking at our children and asking, can they do math? Can they read a text and understand it? Can they cooperatively get involved in social groups? And when I see this, that this is sadly not the case with many black children, I believe I am not seeing simply racism. Because are their parents racist against the children, that the parents aren't raising the children to be citizens, to be engaged, to be educated? He says, I'm seeing something that is more specific and that is remediable. The obviously insufficient development of their human potential. It is a waste. It's an outrage. Okay. I want to move on because I do have a lot to get through. So with that, I'm going to go to this. This is maybe an odd segue, but I have to cover this, and I'm okay. Scott Moorfield tweeted, this is Chris Cuomo talking with Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin. They're talking about the 6-block autonomous zone in her city that is now known as CHAZ, C-H-A-Z, all caps, where armed Antifa types have driven off police and set up checkpoints, and I've seen the photo. They're carrying AK-47s or whatever firepower they have. They're carrying weapons, okay? Which apparently isn't a problem for the anti-gun left. As long as the anti-gun left has the guns, they're pro-gun. So you gun enthusiasts out there, hold on to your Second Amendment, because they certainly feel like it applies for them, even though they want to disarm you. All right, so this is Mayor Jenny Durkin on with Chris Cuomo.
I don't have to tell you about the situation on the ground in your city, but in terms of how it looks to the rest of the country and the president teeing it up as basically ineptitude, the inability to control your own streets. Is that fair criticism?
So I know it will shock you that the president is perhaps not giving an accurate or truthful picture. We've got 4 blocks in Seattle that you just saw pictures of.
I just want to point out, the president tweeted that it was inept of the government to cede 6 blocks of her city to a terrorist organization. He called it ineptitude. No, it wasn't ineptitude. We did it on purpose. So now we know where you stand. But listen, listen to this.
That is more like a block party atmosphere. It's not an armed.
What? It's more like a block party atmosphere. It's not an armed takeover. They took over and they're carrying arms.
Armed takeover. It's not a military junta.
To clarify, they took over and they're carrying arms. The fact that you chose to stand down, to bow down, to kneel down, whatever you want to call it. Listen to what she says. This is an absolute outrage.
We will make sure that we can restore this, but we have block parties and the like in this part of Seattle all the time. It's known for that. So I think the president, number one, there is no threat right now to the public. And we're taking that very seriously. We're meeting with businesses and residents. But what the president threatened is illegal and unconstitutional. And the fact that he can think he can just tweet that and not have ramifications is just wrong.
The counter will be block parties don't take over a municipal building, let alone a police station, and destroy it, basically thumbing their nose at any sense of civic control. Do you believe that you have control of your city and that you would be able to clear those streets? Because you haven't.
We do. And the chief of police was in that precinct today with her command staff looking and assessing on operational plans. But we saw that it was a point of conflict night after night between the police department and protesters.
Here you go.
And we wanted to de-escalate that.
There you go. De-escalate. They're calling it de-escalation. That's what they call it. That's like, I don't know, it's a lovely euphemism. We de-escalated. It's called retreat. Okay? It's what the French do. Nothing against you French people. I love France, but come on. They surrender. It's called surrender. There you go. It's called surrender. She's calling it de-escalation. We chose to de-escalate because we saw how angry they were. I'm sorry. Are you kidding me? Do you know, it's funny because it's funny. I used to say this a lot and I've stopped saying it and I think I'm going to start saying it again. I say, here comes my Tourette's because I want to swear so badly. Like there's just not a word that goes as far as this. And I won't swear. But there are times when I like really have to like strive. And this is what we chose to de-escalate. That's called surrender. That's all that is.
We decided was the best way to do that was reopen the streets. And that itself ended up with some ramifications for the precinct to remove anything that was valuable out of that building.
Oh, but wait a minute. They not only surrendered, they vacated. Here, Hitler, have the city. Bye-bye now. It's like they surrendered and vacated. And this is the mayor of Seattle. This is the mayor. And then she's going to talk a little bit about Trump. But what she says at the end of this clip is just precious.
Make sure that all of Seattle is safe. We take public safety seriously. But the description the president has given is not only wrong, but if it were right, his remedy is wrong. You don't dominate. Remember why we're here. You know, we're here because
you don't dominate. You don't try to win over an enemy. You submit to the enemy. That's what she's saying. You submit, you surrender, you cede the ground, you vacate. That's what you do. Do you think that they're going to stop there? Do you think that somehow you've placated them? Here's the problem. She's working for them. She's not working for the citizens of Seattle. She's working for the non-citizens. She's working for the anti-citizens. Antifa, we should call them anti-citizens. Antisi. Because that's what they are. They're anti-American. Anti-Ams instead of Antifas. Anyway, I shouldn't play word games. Listen to this last little piece here.
The nation saw Mr. Floyd murdered, and that lit a match across this country. And we have to acknowledge and know that we have a system that is built on systemic racism, and we have to dismantle that system piece by piece. We have to empower the Black community and communities of color. And
I don't have to tell you about the situation.
We have to dismantle that system. Sorry, I tried to play it again. We have to dismantle that system piece by piece.
Systemic racism, and we have to dismantle that system piece by piece.
We have to dismantle the United States of America piece by piece. We have to dismantle the United States of America piece by piece. That is her argument. That is her answer. That's her answer. And this is the big problem that we face, is that we've been teaching a single version of history for too long. And the people who are in the streets do not know anything of the other side. And it is the snake eating its tail, and I'm afraid the snake is going to win, which I know is ridiculous. You can't, there is no winner in that scenario. But for them to take Gone with the Wind down, Gone with the Wind, and they took it down in protest, well, then they should take the Oscars down, because my gosh, Oscars so white. They should just stop the Oscars. Stop them. Stop everything that has ever done anything wrong. And by the way, no redemption. And this is the story of hopelessness that the left tries to peddle, tries to sell us all. Is that if you've done anything that is remotely wrong, you are doomed to death immediately. Immediate execution. Except if you're a party line person. Except if you're Antifa. Except if you're George Floyd. Look, okay. All right. She is the mayor of Seattle, and she thinks that they have to destroy the system. And so she is allowing Antifa full access, full expression. Just have at it, guys. Just, you know, call me when you're done. And she doesn't realize that she's part of the system. So she should just off herself. She should just resign. She's part of the system. What is she doing? She should just resign. If she really believes this drivel, then she should resign, because she's part of the problem. There shouldn't be a mayor. That's part of the systemic racism, that there are mayors. I mean, gosh, if there are cops and we have to get rid of the cops, then we have to get rid of the mayors. Then we have to get rid of all of the, we have to get rid of all of our legislators. They're part of it, right? Let's just completely destroy the entire government system, and then it'll be better. By the way, if you bring an assault weapon to a block party, I have a feeling it won't go so well. Like, that won't be viewed as reasonable. So Guy Benson tweeted this video, and he said, my favorite parts of block parties are the checkpoints, assaults, and extortion, because they're extorting people now. And then Craig Keenan tweeted, I know our neighborhood uses concrete barricades and shakes down locals before a hot dog hits the grill. Absolutely. Don't you know? Seattle police chief says rapes, robberies, and all sorts of violent acts have been occurring in the area, and we're not able to get to them. That's not happening. It's a block party. That, you know, okay, a couple of rapes at a block party, but who's counting? She says, Chaz is not a lawless wasteland of anarchist insurrection. It's a peaceful, oh my gosh, expression of our community's collective grief and their desire to build a better world. And then she takes a stab at Trump. Protesters, mayor, resign. Mayor, see, we are very passionate here. Anyway. Okay. And here's what's funny. Like, where'd the pandemic go? I'm so glad that there's no problem with the pandemic anymore. So the Antifa people in the autonomous zone are taking up farming. They poured some topsoil onto the grass. They seem to have simply placed some plants onto the soil rather than digging holes. They're expecting to keep the plot sufficiently watered with a watering can. It's a very large plot they have, but they do have a watering can, so that's excellent. I think Bloomberg should go down there. He said it's just a matter of putting a couple of seeds in the soil and then you're done. Nothing says autonomous quite like calling the city fire department to put out your literal dumpster fire. Protesters called the fire department about a dumpster fire. Okay. All righty. And then this happened. The schools sicked cops on an 11-year-old because when he was doing virtual lessons, they saw a BB gun and they say, hey, it's no different than bringing a gun to school. It is slightly because you can't shoot people through the monitor. What is wrong with people? They called the police. It's just, come on, folks. Seriously? For goodness sake. The school's principal complained. And, yeah, okay. Moving on. That's all I got there. I'm just... Nothing. I'm struggling. This is Biden. I got to play you Biden because, you know, even he sees it. What's funny is how slowly he's talking. So listen to this.
But even Dr. King's assassination did not have the worldwide impact that George Floyd's death did.
He has a mask hanging off his ear. Does he not realize that that just looks ridiculous? We've gotten all of these, what are they called? You know, posturing things now. We've got, there's like too many. We're going to be so overburdened. We're going to have to wear a mask on the one ear. You got to wear gloves on your hands. Like we're completely in this mode of, hey, let's just encumber ourselves as much as possible. Matt Goetz, the U.S. shouldn't have a national soccer team if the players aren't going to stand for the anthem. I don't know why we're funding anything. If the government funds it, you should stand for it. There's a trend on Twitter, I stand with Tucker Carlson. Interesting. All right. Let's see. I guess that's almost it, right? There's a very cute video going around. I think I'm going to show it on TV on Monday. It's a snake literally doing like this weird. So you know how snakes move side to side, they sidewind. But this snake, he's got his whole front part like curled back, so he's got several curves and he's just going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then they put music to it. It's actually very clever. Oh, we didn't talk about the Harvard professor. Got indicted for concealing his lab work with the university in Wuhan, China. So that's interesting. The U.S. is cracking down on Chinese espionage efforts. About time. The charges were released from the DOJ this week. He's 61. He's alleged to have lied about participating in China's Thousand Talents program, which lures top scientists to China. You can be bought. Everybody has a price. And Tim Scott delivered a scathing rebuke of leftists throwing racial slurs at him on Twitter. They threw racial slurs at Tim Scott because he's taking part in trying to come up with a solution for police brutality. And they're like, oh, you're just working for the man. See, they want anarchy because they can usher in totalitarianism. And folks, we have to realize it and we have to stand up against it. We simply must. So with that, I think that's it. All right. Oh, building a better world, but instead of pillow forts, they're building it with Bernie's dumpsters. I'm sorry, that's funny. I'm going to retweet that. Thank you for that. When will Americans stand up against all enemies, foreign and domestic? It used to be easy to say. I'm not sure where we go from here, honestly. Well, we stand up. That's what we do. We're American. We stand up, Sergeant Brown. All right, thanks for tweeting at me. Listen, go have a great rest of your day. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you back here next Monday. God bless.